I've been with Microsoft for about close to 8 years now, and in this particular role, I've been about 7 months down the line right now. And it isn't working. Louder. Yeah, my name is Srikanthan. I'm a senior program manager based out of Bangalore. I work with the Microsoft Technical Evangelism and Development team. I've been with Microsoft for about 8 years now, and in the current role, it's been about 7 months or so, if I'm not wrong. And I'm very happy to be here with all of you out here. And the topic that we're going to cover today, it's about modernizing and managing access to your line of business services using Azure API Management. So basically, it's about Azure API Management and what all you could actually do with it potentially, and how you could leverage it best to your organization's requirements. So that's basically what I'm going to cover today. The agenda for today's session would comprise of the above. We'll look at why at all is API management required in the first place. What are the various concepts that you should be aware of before you sort of go ahead and delve deeper into API management? And then we'll also look at a couple of scenarios where we can, I can sort of show you how we can create such an API which is going to consume a backend service, and then how do you sort of deploy it, manage, and monitor it as we go ahead. I'll also show you how, as a developer, you could subscribe to such a service, and then how you could access a portal where you could register yourself, subscribe to the different APIs, and sort of choose what works best for you. And then if you're an application developer, you could actually consume that API and then embed it into any native application that you build, and then you could sort of be good to go with that. We'll also look at managing the usage of the different APIs to make sure that there are specific tenants or customers who are using it, and how do you make sure that you're apportioning resources appropriately, and then you're able to track their usage and make sure that it's in line with what you have envisaged for them. And then we'll also look at some of the analytics and dashboard capabilities where you can actually monitor near real time in terms of its usage and how the various services and the components are performing. So that's broadly the agenda. And usually what I do is I keep it interactive in the sense that I have the question and answer session as and when we go through the motions. But given the time that we have now, probably I'll keep that towards the end. If something is very critical and probably fits into the context of what I'm saying, I'd be glad to answer them. But I would like to sort of keep it towards the end. We'll have 10 minutes set aside entirely, completely for answering your questions. A definition of API management is basically a process of publishing, promoting, and overseeing APIs in a secure and scalable environment. What I mean by that is, let's say you have an organization, you have deployed numerous applications and numerous application services which are being used in your organization for various day-to-day business activities. How do you make sure that at some point you realize there's a lot of value in sort of extracting it to a next higher level and being able to share it with your customers, partners, and also make your employees much more productive by surfacing those applications which can be accessed from mobile devices, for example. So typically in a corporate network, you have all the boundaries, the firewalls, the corporate network, which forbids you from accessing any application from the public internet. So how do you, but still, you feel that with the modern day scenario where each and every employee is empowered to carry his own device to work, and then he has the experience of working with native applications, and he sees how productive and how pleasing and easy it is to use, he expects naturally that he should be able to carry out his day-to-day business work also using these devices and apps. So how do you make sure such a system, such a scenario could be fructified? So that's basically what API management is. How do you make sure that you bring the power of what is within the organization to a higher level and make sure that it could be securely and sort of conveniently shared with external organizations? So which is why you see the emphasis on private APIs, partner, and public. Private, as I discussed, the fact that you want to increase the efficiency of your mobile workers, your employees, when they're actually on the move. So that's basically what private APIs. Public is where you actually, over a period of time, you have numerous applications. You have built up a library of media and digital content, which you see a lot of value for in terms of monetizing it. So how do you make sure that you make it available to the public, and then you're able to charge them for it, and in turn, you see a new revenue and business model coming up for yourself. With partners, you could imagine that, let's say, you are a manufacturer, and then you are dependent naturally on your suppliers for the various spare parts and all of that. Because you have a niche for yourself, you have this scenario where you want to engage your partners who are very critical and who are sort of very faithful to you and all that. You want to give them an early bird's view of what is really being manufactured in your plant. So they are able to sort of get on early in the engagement with you to be able to understand what the design asset is actually unfolding inside your organization. They're able to keep abreast with it. They're able to identify themselves. And then they're also able to take some kind of proactive steps so that when the product is finally designed and ready, they're also equally up to speed in terms of having their raw materials for you to consume. So you're able to sort of expose information from, let's say, an ERP system where you expose the in-progress engineering bill of material, for example, securely to them, and then they register for this kind of a service. You could probably optionally charge them also for the whole thing. And then, but you see that overall the productivity and the entire ecosystem gets much more efficient going forward. So that's basically the emphasis of what API management is and what kind of problem it tries to address. Having identified the benefits of taking that kind of an approach, but still there's numerous challenges that you need to surmount before you say that you are able to use API management. So first of all, you need to ready your APIs for publication. So let's say you have applications written in various protocols in various different kind of languages, and typically within an organization, you have numerous teams or third-party agencies who probably have engaged a development team. They have built an application which is deployed for, let's say, a decade or something like that. You have numerous such applications, which you can imagine it's going to be so difficult to make sure all of them follow the same protocol, the same kind of interfaces and all that. So how do you make sure that you can't sort of pull in all those people and ask them to make those changes to be make it to make the whole thing much more generic or something like that? In which case, you need to have something like API management, which sort of abstracts all that complexity and makes it simple for you to sort of expose that functionality. An example for that would be, let's say there are some services inside which only talk XML and SOAP and all of that. And you know that in the modern day, all the applications, they are highly dependent on JSON as a technology to be able to exchange lightweight objects. So how do you make sure that you don't engage all those multitude of teams to make those changes to the application? Instead, you have this kind of a wrapper which is going to take care or handle all that complexity and makes and sort of lets you live with your system as they are. You also need to have some kind of a mechanism where people should be able to discover that you have such a service available in your organization. So how do you make sure you publish all this information where people could access that, and then on a need basis, they could sign up and register for the whole subscription and products and be informed of the whole thing? And then how do you make sure that you are able to sort of sustain or harvest some kind of a forum where they meaningfully discuss all those issues that they face using your products? And ultimately, the whole thing adds value to your own product development, and you are able to mature that application. And having given built those applications and APIs, you also have to make sure that only the right people have access to the right kind of APIs, and you don't necessarily sort of give all and sundry kind of access to each and every user who's going to subscribe to your APIs. Okay? So this is about how people subscribe to and how to make sure that you have some kind of a security policy which makes sure that only the right people have right kind of an access, and how do you make sure that they're able to collaborate and sort of have a very rich ecosystem going on. And the most important thing is, how do you make sure that you are able to scale out, and as and when new people come on board, and new developers and organizations subscribe to your APIs, how do you make sure that you're able to sustain as the usage grows? You should be easily able to scale out your process without sort of doing a rip and sort of replace kind of a thing where you just add some couple of boxes or something like that. It's going to be very non-trivial. You can imagine the entire procurement cycle where you need to order some hardware, and by the time you get them in place, and then you scale that out, but probably you miss a business opportunity in that meantime. So how do you make sure that you have that kind of an infrastructure which lets you scale out, make sure that it reduces latency, and then it optimizes performance? So there, all of this in essence is what API management is about. Conceptually, this is how the architecture of API management looks like. So this is where you have API management in the center of the whole picture. So you have this particular proxy. It's basically a proxy service. It's a sort of, I'm trivializing it by calling just a proxy service. It's much more than that. But essentially, the role it is performing is that it is acting as a proxy to the backend service which you sought to sort of envelop or sort of cover over. Okay, and this could be any API which is written in the modern languages. It could be REST. See, at the moment, a disclaimer is the fact that we very well support REST-based APIs to be able to, so that you could consume them. Any XML-based, HTTP-based request could very well be handled here. But beyond that, the team is still working on further integration capabilities, how to sort of handle native protocols and all of that. But that will come down the way. So at the point that we have and where we are in, we have first-class support for REST-based APIs, which can be consumed. As I said, you have the proxy, which is going to sort of handle all the abstraction of your backend service. And you have this publisher and developer portal. The publisher portal is basically the administrator's portal of the API management service. He actually manages the whole service, and then he makes sure that how the different APIs are created and how and when they are published, the versioning and all of that. And he also controls and at what point of time he should be able to publish APIs as and when they get ready in your stables, and then you push it to the development portal. So once you have the developer portal configured and up and running, you can have developers subscribing to that. Okay, and then they get access to all the applications out here through this particular proxy. And then the admin is the guy who's going to make sure that things are working like a well-oiled machine. That also is supported. And the question was, is it based on OAuth? Yeah, definitely, yes. We support that as well. One second, let me make sure I got the, what happened to it. Can you guys help? It's not coming here, but I can see it here. Hey, sorry about that, but let's get this fixed. Yeah, I think it's a good time to take your question. No. I mean, the service API which you're consuming, yeah, they can be either on-premise or in Azure, doesn't matter. No, it's entirely agentless. All the software that is running for the service runs entirely in Azure. But for some scenarios, let's say you want to have a hybrid kind of an interaction where you have an SAP system running in ERP running, and then obviously you don't have REST-based calls which you can directly call here, and then you also have virtual private network, then probably you will have a BizTalk service running in Azure, which is actually having that communication to it. And BizTalk hybrid connection entails that you need to have a connection manager inside on-premise to make that possible. But that is totally aside from API management itself, which is purely a service running in Azure cloud. Yeah, I hope that answers your question. Yes. At this point, we don't yet, but probably you'll hear about that soon. Yeah. We don't at the moment. Building, let's come to that. So I have some slides which will sort of answer this question. I don't want to jump the gun by answering that right now. SOAP, yes, it does. But as I said, the first class citizenship is only for REST services right now. For SOAP, probably it entails some kind of more work and some kind of, additional effort required to replace all the XML fragments with the SOAP headers and all that. It's a bit more work than I would actually like. But I guess you just have to wait before and some more time before you have all that very well supported. So it's just a matter of time. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I've just. Yeah, so there could be scenarios where you have a web-facing website already, which is accessed by customers, partners. That's a different story altogether. You're talking of some systems which exist in your organization, which so far have been sort of bound by the confines of your organization, used by internal users and all that. And then you see that over time you have collected so much of digital assets which have got a lot of monetary value associated with them. So you'd probably at some point think, why should I not sort of make this sellable? Why should I not monetize the whole thing? And then direct point-to-point business can only grow to a certain point. But beyond that, when you can actually leverage these areas too, then probably you add more value to a business. So you say that I'll also expose this as a service so that my customers and partners can also get on board. And then I'll actually charge them for all the information that I'm going to give it to them. I'll talk of some scenarios later on. So just hold your question. I get your point. I will definitely address those. Oh, yeah. It's back here. I'm sorry, because we're short of time. I'll not spend too much time addressing questions right now, but I'll be glad to answer them as long as it takes towards the end. I think you talked about the slide. Any questions here? But before we move on, yeah. So what are the different use case scenarios? Probably we just jumped the gun by talking about some of them. One is basically monetizing your existing digital assets. So as I said, over time you have collected so much of information assets which you think has got a lot of monetary value associated with it. You probably think that why not I sort of expose this and make it accessible to my customers and partners from the internet, and then I securely control all of that, and then I'm able to charge them for it and in turn sort of supplement the business that I'm having with them. The other one is about the product transformation from a product to a platform. For example, there's a company called Speak2It where they built a particular product which is able to sort of have the voice enabled integration to applications, and then they're able to sort of, they're sort of pioneers in the particular market field. At some point they realized that instead of this particular product residing as a siloed application inside every organization where we deployed, so why not I make this available as a service so that any developer who wants to use this capability can use this speech to text, vice versa, and all of that into their applications, and I'll charge them for it. So it becomes a service from what it was originally, which is a product. And the last is basically, I spoke about it already, I'll not belabor on that point again, the fact that your employees are much more productive when they're on the move, and it's natural for them to expect that all the apps are available on their mobile devices, they're able to sort of accomplish day-to-day business-specific tasks right from the confines of their tablets or devices, which they're very comfortable to work with. So these are the three sweet spots where we see API management really playing a big part. So what does all it entail? The fact that you should be able to adapt, expose, protect, I'll not sort of read out those slides, but just to make sure I convey the point here, the fact that you should be able to handle different protocols and formats, you should be able to aggregate backend services effectively, you should be able to package the backend services so that it is much more reachable and available to the audience at large across the world. You should also be able to handle authorization, quotas, rate limits, because, I'm sorry, you want to make sure that you are giving the right amount of horsepower to a particular customer who is paid upfront for it. You don't want to sort of sandwich him into a scenario where you have a shared infrastructure, and whether he's a high-value customer or not, willy-nilly he gets the kind of perceived performance just because some other low-value customer is taking hogging all the horsepower, for example. You make sure that you have the right kind of resources available to your customers as well. You should also be able to monitor the health, latency, activity, and trends, and all that, make sure your infrastructure is running as a well-oiled machine. And then how do you also make sure you handle lifecycle versioning and all of that? So let's talk of a use case where you have a backend service which you want to envelop or encompass using the API management capability. So typical flow out here, because I'll be doing those on the screen, I'm not sure how well it will register when I demo that to you, but I thought I'll give this picture to you so that you'll be able to associate yourself with what you see here with what I'm doing right now, hopefully. You'll actually start with creating a definition for a facade API. I call it facade because it's going to be the wrapper over existing on-premise services. You'll actually then map this particular wrapper to specific methods and calls which you make in your backend services. And then you'll also add documentation. We all know it's reality, the fact that all the applications which were built probably a decade back, not all of them were actually rich in terms of documentation. It's difficult for a third person to sort of understand what exactly is happening. So this is a good opportunity for you to sort of add the requisite documentation into the facade API so that you sort of make it easy for the external world to consume your applications. You can also set an authentication policy in terms of determining whether it should be an OAuth based token which gets passed on, which takes a user context, or you want to look at just a point-to-point kind of an authentication where you pass a digital certificate from the client and then it is understood at the server, and that's about it. So you could sort of be look at various options out there as well. Having done all of this, at some point you'll actually add multiple APIs into a product. For example, you could associate a product with something like a module in ERP, for example. You could say that the master data module comprises of supplier, master, customers, and all of that. So you'll have an API for customers, suppliers, and all of them could be wrapped into a notional entity called a product, which is where you actually control the amount of quotas, limits, and all that, and that's basically what this is for. And then you can also determine some usage policies, which says that, let's say I have a starter version of a product, I should not allow per subscription not more than 5 calls in, let's say, 1 hour or something like that. And whereas I also have a full scale or sort of a limitless version where people have already paid for it, so where I don't impose those kind of constraints on it, so people can make as many calls as they have signed up for. So this is basically what policies are about. We'll give a demo of all of that going forward. So having done all of this, you have created those APIs, facade APIs, you have created a product, you have added multiple APIs into a product, and at some stage you sort of publish the product so that you're saying that it is available to the consumers at large. And then you also define all the access, so you're determining who should be able to access what. It's a developer, what should he see, If it's an administrator, what should you be able to do on the APIs? And then the information gets available in the developer portal. And after that, you can actually test it first as an administrator. And then you'll, when you're actually publish it for the public, then they'll be able to use it into their applications. And the key thing about the whole thing is that the time to the first successful call is extremely narrow, because the whole thing is extremely intuitive and easy to do. And then you also have an intuitive console from where you can test this particular API out, make sure it works the way it should, and then you sort of call your code and then integrate with it. So it reduces the entire throughput of you understanding the whole thing and integrating into your applications. I'm sorry, there's a bug out there. I sort of, there's some kind of animation which is covering that particular box up. Yeah, so now from the developer perspective, the administrator having done his job, he can actually send either an email-based invite where he can invite a developer with a specific email address, or he can have those developers signing up directly. It's covered right now, where they access the website, they auto-sign up or subscribe to, and then they come on board. And once they have the requisite license or authority, a sort of developer key will be generated for them, which they can use or embed into their applications. And after they do that, if they are individual developers who build native apps which they upload to the various stores, then they can actually create their apps. They can register them in this developer portal where all these keys will be subsumed. So as the customers of this particular developer, you don't care what the subscription key is because they all use this guy's subscription key. But the app can be registered here and then multiple users can use that. Or it can so happen that this guy just represents an organization where he wants to consume this API into some other line of business application, for example. Then he could sort of, he can do away with the application part of it. He could just sort of integrate this backend service or whatever it is. And then he can, at a developer level, track consumption and see how much of the resources he's using, whether he's able to sustain the whole thing. So I think that's about this with this slide. So let me move on. So let's go through a demo of the whole thing. I'm sure you guys have seen the Azure Management Portal by now, so I'm not really going to delve on that. I'm in this particular tab called the Azure API Management. You would see that I have created three different API management services right now. So for this particular aspect of the demo, which I'm going to show you about the entire process of creating an API, I'll be using this particular service. So when I click on this, it takes me to this view where I can see a bird's eye view of the service. Okay, and then knowing that I'm the administrator, so I'm going to the publisher portal. And from here, it takes me to a different URL where I can see all the a bird's eye view of all the applications and the products that I have configured so far. To quickly sort of tell you what this is about, this is the dashboard, which is basically the home page of the whole thing. And then he, as an administrator, is able to see the number of calls received and the different APIs. These are actually APIs which I have configured. And then he's able to see how many calls were received in the last couple of days. And then you see all those indicators which you know are comfortable with Azure. You know that this is how it monitors at a granular level. And this is what actually you use to understand what exactly has been displayed to you. And then you also have those issues and all of that. Whenever a developer faces some kind of issue, he can register a complaint and then he can address all of those. He gets a bird's eye view of the whole thing. On the left-hand side, you see that I have those APIs which I've configured so far. I'll go into each of them. And then you have the products. Remember, I told you that multiple APIs can be sort of wrapped together and then pushed into the confines of a product. You can have policies which determine how the usage has to be metered and how should you apportion all the horsepower to the different customers or developers in this case. Analytics, I think, self-explanatory. This is where you define the different users, developers, who should be able to have access to the portal itself, to the API management service, and how do you make sure that you associate them to a group and then give them appropriate rights to access the developer portal. This is not about the user access to the backend service, but this is about the developer portal and how do you make sure that you secure access to it. And then you also have notifications and email templates on given the different scenarios. How do you, what is the template you use, and who should be the target audience of that particular notification? So all those things can be configured here. Security is where you define what kind of security I want to implement for developers to access the portal, as also how we can communicate with the backend services. We'll go into that in a little bit more detail, but I want to explain what this whole thing stands for. Having said that, let's move on to the API tab out here. You see that I'll first show you how an existing thing works, and then I'll take you through the process of creating one. I have created this service called the customer service. And when I look at the API, you see that there are multiple tabs. And then when I go down here, it gives me the bird's eye view of how much calls have been made to it so far. Okay, and then I can also, sorry, I can export this API. Let me go to the settings tab. So this is where the settings exist for the API when I created it. It tells me this is the name, and then I can actually give a description and all of that. So let me not spend time on the trivial ones. I'll just talk of some critical aspects. So this is key out here. So this is the UI of the backend service which I'm going to consume in my application. So which is what I have indicated here. And then I can say that for my REST API, when I call this particular service, it will be the prefix stroke API, which is how you represent in REST-based invocations. I can specify that I want to call over HTTPS, which is definitely a good idea, because you might have some query parameters going in the string parameters going in the query parameters, which you want to make sure that they are not visible to the outside eye. So once you actually configure the whole thing, this is how the your API management API is going to look like. So this is just the broad definition or metadata of it. Sorry, it's gotten magnified. So let me go to the operations within this particular API. So you see that I have multiple operations which I have created. One is, they're quite self-explanatory. Get all customers from the table, create a customer, get customer by unique ID, and then how do you make sure that you actually leverage caching capability of API manager, which sort of, we'll talk about that as well. Let me just execute one particular request for you. So when I click on all customers, I'm sorry, the mouse is acting up. So this is the definition of this particular API. It is basically a get operation, and this is how I'm going to call from my API management URL. Okay, and then if there are any parameters which I want to pass to the service that I'm consuming, I'll actually do that. I'll show it to you in another method where we take the input parameters from the query string and then set it to the backend service which should be invoked. Okay, and this is where actually I add the user-friendly name for the method API and then the entire description for it. I can also go to the parameters tab here. I can add more query parameters if I want to. And then I can define responses as well. So when it's something successful, you get a 200 back from the service. And then you can say what exactly is going to be returned. So when it is successful, you give a description. So the developers, when they consume this API, they'll be able to see this information, which is sort of self-explanatory for them and easy to consume. And then you can also give a representation of the JSON that it's going to return. You could imagine that depending on the same API being called with different header parameters, you could have either a JSON or an XML and all that. So this is where the beauty of API management lies. For example, your backend system only returns XML all the time. It is not really savvy about JSON, in which case you can add a policy here which says that if XML is coming in, I always want JSON to be written back because my mobile application only understands JSON. Whereas for other applications, you could continue using XML for all you care. So this is where you do all that kind of magic, which makes sure that you can be, you can increase the reach of your service broadly. Let me go to the security tab. I don't know what I did.
I have a quick
question. Yeah, sure.
So is there the only way to version this would be like /V1/V2, or is there a more intelligent way of?
At present, that's the way you do it, V1/V2 kind of a thing.
Okay.
But going forward, you can imagine there'll be much more innovation happening there, and you'll be able to better handle it.
Yeah.
But at the moment, this is it.
Okay,
and I'm sorry, yeah. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you well. Yeah, that's what he just asked me about. Right now, you just have to go with the names and then add a V1, V2. It's quite trivial, not really great, I would say. But going forward, you can expect that you'll have much more mature handling of that. Yeah, that's a valid point. But I'm sure you'll be able to address that going forward. But right now, this is where we are. The innovation is continuously happening now. We also don't support all the protocols, but we made a good beginning, and then we are continuing the good work out there. I'll talk about that. I think the slides to come where your question will be answered. I don't want to waste time now talking about something which is eventually going to come. Okay. Okay. So this is where I define what is the kind of authentication method I want to use. It could be either OAuth, where actually you have an OAuth authentication server where the user, when he hits this particular service, it sees that it's configured for OAuth. It redirects him to that particular UAuth sign-in page. He signs in there, token gets issued. And then subsequently, beneath the scenes, it gets pushed to the backend service, which understands that particular token, and then he's able to identify and authenticate and do all of that. Or you could also have basic as well as certificate-based authentication, which is, of course, just point-to-point. It's not at a user level. So if you want to have a user level, the guy who's actually accessing that service, you might have to do it in your application or your code to be able to either pass it in the body or header or something like that, and then sort of handle it. But this is just to authenticate that this particular client from where I'm getting the request from is valid, and I know him, and this, I just let him, and that's it. Okay. And the issues, let me not spend too much time here. Products is key, because this is where I told you, if you remember, I would package all my APIs into a product, which each of those actually will have a different kind of policy applied to it. A starter, for example, maximum you can make is 5 calls in a minute, and up to 100 in a week, not beyond that. Whereas an unlimited one is, as the name says, it's unlimited. And then you could have the same API pushed into multiple products as well. So it doesn't stop you from sort of having an all or none kind of a thing. So you can do all of that. Now, having seen the, how the API is created, so let me go to the developer portal where it is published. So I click on that particular ribbon out there. It takes me to the developer portal. So this is how it's going to look like for the external world. And I'm logged in as an administrator, so I can even see things which are in progress and all of that. I click on the API tab out here. You see all the services that are published. So I, as a developer, will click on this. So this is where the documentation thing comes into play. You see that you have all the information available to you about that service, which you can easily consume, and the fact that it's a description. And also, you have ready-to-use code samples for every application or language. You click on the, let's say, Java, for example. So it gives you the entire code which you need to embed in your application to make the successful invocation. So it makes it as easy as that. All you need to pass is probably just your subscription ID. You have a placeholder for that, and then you're good to go. So this is where actually the magic of the whole thing comes here. And then it also tells you that in this case, I have assigned only a single JSON response format. You could imagine that if the same service is going to return multiple formats depending on what I give as a flag to the input request, you could actually have multiple tabs. If one could be for XML and other could be for something else, for example. And then what are the different kind of errors or success conditions it's going to return? It could be multiple here. I've just sort of added one for sake of simplicity. So let me go ahead and execute this. You see that I have an open console. So as a developer, I see that I have I see this particular method called get all customers. And then how to make sure it works for me, I just click on this. It has picked up my subscription key because I'm a registered developer. So it lists all the subscription keys that should go into the request for every developer. And then I can go ahead and execute this. Right now, there are no input parameters because it is get all from the customers table. And here I've added a header which says that I want to be able to trace the particular request. I'll talk about this later, but just be aware that you can actually have flags which tells you that let the server trace each and every operation inside so that I can debug and troubleshoot it later if need be. I execute the method now. First time will take some time because it initiates lots of things. So you see that it has written a successful response, okay, and all that. You see the entire response header, and then all the customers from the particular backend service have come back. So let me also show you one more, which is get customer by ID. And obviously, this needs an input parameter. Then I execute this. Okay, so now it has actually returned an XML because that's basically what the service is returning to me.
Can we provide a custom document?
Yeah, you can. I'll show that to you towards the end. Just be, remind me on that. I'll show it to you. Right now, it'll break my flow if I go into that, but you can definitely do that. Okay, so let me make sure I covered all that I wanted to in the we talked of adding code documentation. Regret URLs, I didn't show that to you. Let me quickly take you to that. What exactly do I mean by that? So let me, I need to go back to the manage, which is the publishing portal, where I'll show you how to pass those input parameters, because I'm calling from my facade, and then how to pass those parameters appropriately to the backend service. So this is how you configure that, the customer service. And I have this operation called get customer by ID, where I map the parameters. So you see that my API management application needs to pass a path-based parameter, which is more in line with how we handle JSON and how do you make sure you call a REST-based object, whereas my internal application expects a query string with an ID equals and all that. So whatever is in bracket is what gets mapped to it. So there are multiple parameters. We can actually map all of that. So this is how you actually map all those parameters. So right now, we're just in a simple get operation. So how do you configure a post, for example? Let me go to the operations tab, and then I go to create customer. So here, obviously, you see that there are no query parameters. I can't pass it in the URL, obviously. I need to do it somewhere else. So I can click on the body tag out here. And then I can give a sample out here. Let me just copy this sample from here. And then I'll. Yes. That's up to you how you define that JSON structure, and your service is able to parse it. Okay, so this is how you define your post operation. Let me just quickly execute the same thing for you from this tool here, so which is where I'm calling the same API, and then I'm using the post out here. So I just do a send. And then actually, I'm not returning anything like success or failure, which is why you see a blank out here. But we have entered this particular data into the backend service. Just to show that to you, let me just execute it again. And then we'll go back to the database and then see that indeed it is there. So I'm connecting to the Azure SQL database where the customer object is being created. I need to add the IP address. I want to show that to you, and I'm wasting time doing all this now. Okay, doesn't matter. So this one, I need to enable the firewall rule. So basically, because I'm executing from the, it needs to have a firewall client IP enabled for access to the SQL database, which is what it was cribbing about. So I just added the firewall rule, so I'm able to connect to it now. So now let me execute the search. Okay, so this is the customer which we added towards the end. Okay, so that's basically just to showcase how the post operation can also be done from the API management. Okay, so let me see if I've covered all of that. Reread URLs, HTTP headers. I told you how we can add a HTTP header flag which says that I want to trace that particular request. I add that formation into that, and that's all is required. I showed you how you could use the console to test all your APIs from. And then how do you add APIs to one or more products? Probably I'll show that to you. But I'm just looking at the time. It's already 2:40. Oh my goodness, a lot to cover. I'm sorry, I'll just sort of skip this part ahead, but I think you get the idea. I'll just need a lot of things to cover. Probably towards the end, I'll definitely spend time with you, okay? Okay, so we just looked at this. Let's look at policies. I think it's very important. I'll give you a demo of this. I told you that, remember that we have different kind of products and subscriptions. You want to have a starter-based product, and then you also have an unlimited period kind of product, where you want to be able to say that if it's startup, I want to make sure he doesn't use resources more than this particular limit that I'm prescribing. Okay, so you have this particular section out here, which says that, right now, you don't see it. It's for caching that I have taken a screenshot for. I'll look at that example too. This is for caching. So what are the different policies that you can scope for? One is a product level. It could be API, or at an operation level also, you can specify those policies. Okay, and then it also appears hierarchically. So what would define the highest level always prevails over what is beneath that. Okay, And then, and to be able to access these policies, you can also use the REST APIs that Azure provides to interact with those policies. These are a couple of policies that you can configure. This is about converting JSON to XML, I told you about, and then setting some specific parameters into the header so that the backend resource is able to behave appropriately. You can also define call and bandwidth quotas, which are very critical for you to make sure that resource is being appropriately consumed. And then actually you can just read the list over and then you get the idea. Okay, let me give a demo of the policies and quotas as well. Okay, so I am here right now. Let me go to the developer portal. I'm sorry, you still see this on the screen. Okay, let me go to the developer portal. Let me show you the policy the way it is configured first so that you get the idea. So I go to policies. And then remember I told you that we can have policies at product level. So I have defined a policy for a starter which says that the user cannot make 5 calls in the period of more than 5 in the period of 60 seconds. So this is about how rapidly the requests are coming in. But for a longer duration, let's say for a span of a month on which my subscription cycle is also based on, I'll see that over a period of a month, this actually is for a week, this is number of seconds translated to days, it comes to 7. And he should not make more than 100 calls in a week. So this is how I say that if it's a starter kind of a subscription, this is the most he'll get. Okay, so how do you sort of edit that? I can actually click on this and then I can go to this particular section out here and then I can drag and drop all the policies from the right hand side. So we just looked at it in the PPT earlier. I'm sure you're able to relate to that. Okay, and there's one from cache. The screenshot in the PPT which I showed you was from cache, which says that I can have a cache enabled in my API management service, which makes sure that in the backend service, you don't have that implemented well and good. But here, based on the query input parameters, I'm able to cache all the responses so that I'm able to amplify the speed with which I'm able to return all the data to the clients. So this is how API management can actually add a lot of value to that. Okay, so I go back to the presentation right now. Okay. I think even caching is mentioned, so I think I'll just quickly show that to you as well. I'll go to the developer portal out here, and I go to the APIs, or I'll go to the products, and then I go to the starter, and I call the customer service. Okay, and this particular method, which is get all customers, I'm going to execute that a couple of times. You'll see that at the 6th time, it's going to give a too many requests kind of an error. So right now it is 200. So I'm number 2, 3, 4, 5. See, now we got that error because it's a starter edition. So it sees that I cannot execute more than 5. So it sort of errors back saying that you have already exceeded your quota. And this is applied at an individual developer level. It doesn't mean that it's global. Obviously, every developer has the same quota applied to him, totally aside from what it is for the other developer. So you get the idea. Okay. So let me show you the other one, which is about caching. So how do you enable cache? Let's say I want to retrieve this particular object from cache. So when I say HTTP GET, you'll see the So right now it is returning some information, but it's difficult to determine whether it came from the cache. So what I'll do is, you see that it has got this data. So let me update the data at the back end. For customer ID 13, okay, and then where is the update tab? Yeah, so ID is 13, so let me update the value to city name is updated value. Okay, so now let me execute this particular method again. oh, we are exceeding the volume quota, sorry, but that's how it works. It's a basic subscription, so it's not letting me execute the other request, but you get the idea. So now when I execute the request again, it'll show me still the old value because it's still coming from the cache. Okay, so that's what I wanted to show you. Okay, so that sort of lets us move on. We have covered all of these aspects, how do you define policies at the product API and then operation level, and then we also see determine how we could actually enable caching for the request. Move on to developer sign-up and subscription. We talked about this earlier, saying that you could also have social credentials being accepted into the whole thing. I'm an individual developer. I've got a Google account or a Hotmail account, so I'm welcome out here. I can sort of register with that account, and then I don't need to have passwords stored separately. I can use the same logged-in token to be able to associate into this particular thing. And let's say I'm also an organization where I want to have the developers within my organization to be able to build numerous apps, in which case I already have an actual Active Directory running, and I want to sort of hook this whole thing up with that so that my internal organization users can sort of use their AD credentials to be able to sign up and access the application. Okay. So we talked of the developer identities out here. Okay, let me not try too many stunts. Okay, so you have, I discussed all of the identities, and then you can also have a delegated sign up, which means that instead of specifying that Azure is giving you this ability to sort of let users sign up and then sign in, I can also delegate that to the developer organization, saying that you can actually configure a particular URL. You already have an ASP.NET identity membership provider application running. So you are actually more than welcome to give the URL of that, configure that, and then you are responsible for maintaining those developers and authorizing and authenticating them. So that also is possible. The default sign-up process is how an admin can actually initiate an email, and then he can send an email inviting someone, or a developer can also actually self-register and sign up. You have role-based access. I'll show that to you quickly. And then the subscription, when a developer signs up, is actually at the an administrator can determine whether it's auto-subscription. So for a basic tier, you could imagine that I don't want to go through the pain of approving each and everything. But if it's an unlimited tier, obviously I want to intervene, make sure it's the right guy I'm sort of letting access my service. So I'll sort of have an approval step for myself before I actually let him access my application. And then I mentioned this earlier, you have numerous templates to send all the notifications and emails, and then who the emails should be directed to. All those scenarios can also be handled. So I'll just quickly give you a walkthrough of something which is already configured. Okay, so. I need to go back here and select another API management service for which I've done this, the identity provider hookup. So let me go to API management service. And I have this CRM service out here, which is where I have linked up the Azure Active Directory signup process. So let me go to manage. So it takes me to the publisher portal, and just sort of reiterating this, these names, so that you're able to associate what we saw in the PPT and what you're actually seeing right now. So when I go to the security tab out here, you'll see that I click on the identities tab. So this is where I have actually configured the whole thing. So this client ID and secret is basically the URL where a user will first hit when he wants to sign up. And the API management here itself says that by this configuration, you are saying that my API management API, when someone hits that particular URL, first ask him to authenticate himself. And how do I do that? I give this kind of client ID secret, and then this particular domain, which is already there in Azure Directory, so it goes to that particular page where he enters his credentials, AD verifies he's indeed authenticated, gives him a token back, and then he's able to execute that particular request. Okay, so this is what you actually need to do to be able to configure the whole thing. So this is where the redirect URL is. This goes to the sign-in page where he enters his sign-in credentials. And then on the Active Directory side, obviously we need to configure that too. So let me show that to you here. I go to Active Directory, and then so when I go to this, I click on the applications which require Active Directory to authenticate them. So it shows me that this is the CRM app which I have configured. So when I click on this, you see that I have the sign-on URL, okay, and then the client ID and secret, which I entered there, is basically derived from here. I configured this, got the ID, and then I sort of set that in the configuration for API manager, which is how the actually the hookup and linkup is actually happening. And the secret comes from the secret key that you saw comes from here, which is sort of disabled now because it is accessed only first time that I configure it. So the client ID secret is obtained from here. Okay, and this is the API which is going to consume this whole process. So this is all that you need to do to be able to have the Azure Active Directory pitching in for a single sign-on. So let's see this in action right now. So I'm in this particular, I'm in the wrong portal because I need to navigate to another application here, which uses that. Let me go back to API management. I select this particular service out here, and then I click on manage. Let me close this. Okay, so here I am. I'm presently logged in as an administrator, so I'll sign out. Okay, and because I'm going to use AD authentication, so it falls with what I'm already signed in here. I need to sign this off as well. I click on sign in. I've already configured the users who should be able to access, so I'm going to pick that up from here because it's difficult for me to remember them all the time. So this is one user who I have configured. So let me enter his credentials. When I have the Active Directory integration enabled, you see this particular link at the bottom, which is when it appears. This is for the normal email password where you don't care who, you just have the email address, and then he fits in his own password, which is different from the social password, of course. Or you can also have Active Directory integrated. So you can click on this particular link, and then it takes me to a different sign-in page now. So now I enter the email address. I'm the developer inside the organization, so I'm using my Active Directory credentials. So now I'm logged in as a developer within the organization. So this is how I actually see my, so I'm a developer, my name is Sarah Jones, and then I can also access all the, basically what I showed you earlier, he can do all that he is given permission for. Okay, I think you get the idea, so let me move on with the presentation. The other thing which I wanted to show, but I don't think we had time for that. I'll just leave time for some critical ones, so let me move on. Okay, so I couldn't show you these, but I'm glad to show it after the session, just to make sure that we don't miss out on all of this. Okay. Proxy authentication, I think I already mentioned this. You can choose from any of this. It could be basic, mutual, which is point-to-point, and this could be at the user level when the call is made. And this is just an, a sort of a quick logical architecture of how the whole scenario works of proxy authentication. So with basic and client certificate, so we can actually have the proxy passing those parameters to the backend, which understands that and lets the call through to the subsystem. That was basic. Now this is certificate-based authentication. Let's move on to monitoring and analytics. I'm sorry, let me sort of let you dwell on this particular screen for some time. You can actually perform overall monitoring and analytics. I'm the administrator of the whole setup, and then I see all the developers across all of them. I am able to see and monitor all the usage and health and all of that. I can also do it at the per developer level because I have built an app as a developer and people are using it. I need to make sure that I'm sort of providing for all the costs that I'm going to incur, and then everything's within the limits and all of that. I can also monitor the usage. And when you want to, there's a question on metering. So at this point, we don't have a ready-to-use feature that you can actually say this is the metering module for the whole thing. But you have all the APIs and all the data that is getting collected. So at this point, you're free to use these APIs to get the information at a subscription developer level and able to charge your generate your invoice and charge your developers accordingly. So these are the various reports which are available. You can actually monitor the calls, bandwidth, how they're performing, the cache hits and misses. I've configured cache, but exactly how am I using those cache? Is it being done effectively? Yes or no, I can monitor all of that. You can just read through these slides. I can also trace an API call. I'll show that to you quickly. So this is how the snapshot looks like. You can actually see where the different calls are coming from. Not exactly reflecting what I'm doing right now. It's just a dumb snapshot, but you get the idea. So wherever the services and where the client requests are coming from, you actually see a color-based indication of where they're coming from. And then you also have a correlated view on the left in terms of the call volumes and all of that. Okay, let me quickly show you the analytics part. That means I need to log in again. Sorry about that. I think I'll let that part of the demo be. Let's move on to the other points which are more critical. I don't have time, just 5 minutes left, so sorry about that. These are the various, from the architecture perspective, you should be aware of. How do you handle scalability, high availability, and DR, deployed to multiple Azure regions and VPN connectivity? Let me just orally explain to them to you. Scalability is where you can say that by default, a single unit is created. I can, there are three tiers to choose from. One is a developer, a standard, and then a premium. The standard lets you by default create up to 4 units, which means that you deploy your API only once, but the fact that you want up to 4 gets automatically handled for you. Just configure 4 and then it creates those many instances. The cache gets shared and then you get the horsepower available to you. And the premium tier can go, it's actually, there are no limits at the moment, so you can actually spawn as many instances that you want. Apart from actually doing that, you can also spread your load across multiple regions. So I can say that when I'm in the premium tier alone, I have the ability to define that I want to configure this in different geos. What this entails for you is that when a developer hits this particular single URL, depending on where he logged in from, based on proximity assessment, it goes to that particular URL or that particular location where the service is running, then actually making the round way trip around the world to hit somewhere else. So all this is automatically taken care of for you. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to load balance or do anything. It's done by itself. And then high availability and disaster recovery, actually you have inbuilt PowerShell commands and then REST APIs, which you can invoke, and then you can back up an entire service configuration, and then you can restore it in a different location. You also have VPN connectivity for on-premise services, which means that, let's say, I have a service running inside the corporate firewall, which is a REST-based service, for example. Then I can actually create a virtual network in Azure, which works in tandem with that. And then I can directly configure this API management and call that particular URL directly. And I can use it in my mobile application. So that's the ease of communication going through all the barriers that you actually generally associate with accessing a in-premise or a corporate network-based resource. These are the three tiers I spoke to you about. You have the price point, of course, varies regularly, so don't go by that. It's just an indication or a snapshot taken at a point. You can see that with the standard, you get about 7 million calls a day. You can go up to 32 million for premium. This is there on the website, so I'll not spend too much time out here, but you can just look at it for a second. Let me move on. I guess we don't have time for to show you how you customize the developer portal, but it's actually based on this kind of what you see is what you get kind of an editor, where I'm logged in as an administrator, click on a particular tab which says customize, and then I have a style editor where I can go to every section and say this is what I want to have as a color scheme or how the font or whatever it looks like. So basically you can play around with this particular UI. It's based on the Orchard CMS, which is an open source thing. And then it also uses Bootstrap as a means of configuring those style sheets, just for information. I'm sorry, we don't have time for this demo. I'm really sorry about that, but I can talk about it after that. And this is a typical scenario. I thought for architects in the room, it would be useful to see how exactly does it fit into an overall enterprise kind of a scenario, where I have some kind of an ERP system running out here, which doesn't have REST calls, so that I can directly call an API manager. But I have a Bistock hybrid connection out here, which is able to get all the information. And then I have an Azure website where actually it gets all the information. And then the API out, the web API out here, I'm calling from the Azure API management. So this gives you a perspective of the overall architecture and the various components. You see that Azure API management uses the traffic manager to route the request to different locations. You also have an in-memory cache associated with Azure API management where you can actually get performance and all of that. You can also have an authentication provider, any OAuth2 or it could be Azure Active Directory. And yeah, so that's about the high level picture of what a typical architecture could be when you use Azure API for an enterprise scale application. There's a feature list which is pretty detailed. You can look at a slide later on. But I thought for sake of completeness, I'll include this so that you get a good idea what all we cover. These are some customer scenarios. I am sorry we don't have time to talk about that. So these are the various references. And yeah, so that's about brings me to the close of the presentation. So I'll be glad to have your feedback as well in this particular location. Sir, any questions, I'll be glad to answer. Yeah. Yeah, tell me. I'll take his question first.
Yes, sir. It's regarding, sir, API management.
Mm-hmm.
So if a admin wants to be working with someone just to build the API as
Yeah, you have a subscription where there is no subscription per se required. He can just hit that particular product and then he can call that without having to sign up or do anything of that. Customers are using his app, will have the same subscription key. Yeah, so what you need to do is your app needs to pass some indicator or flag in its HTTP header. So with that, the API manager recognizes that I see this particular tag, which means that it's coming from this particular application. So for this, I'll configure a policy which says that if you see this in the header, then you put this particular quota. You can do that. Yeah. Yes, sir. Okay. It's not at an, yeah, you can do it at a method level as well, yes. Yes, you can. Any other question? Sorry, I can't hear you. Can you move closer here if you don't mind? I can't hear you well. Yeah, you have a tracing inspector. Probably let me show that to you. Oh, I need to sign out, sign in. It's going to take a while before I show that to you, but you actually get a URL. With every request, you add a HTTP header flag, which says that this is the URL of that particular trace. I want this particular request to be entirely written to that particular log out there. And then the response, it returns that particular URL. So hit that particular URL, it gives you a JSON object, which gives you the entire flow of the pipeline, what happened to that request. You can do it at a per request level. Yeah. Java program. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm not able to hear in the noise. Can you come here, please, if you don't mind? Yeah. You're right. Yes, that's right. We can only consume an existing API. If there doesn't exist one, you need to create that in the first place. It should be a REST based thing. As of now, that's how any HTTP based, XML based request also is fine. And so a bit of work is required. We can still do that, but it's not straightforward. You just need to sort of do it some kind of workaround. REST, without question, is a first class citizen. Yes. A user, as in, are you talking of developer subscription? End user, end consumer doesn't apply. So as long, all the end consumers get linked to the developer whose subscription is being used. And for that particular subscription has a unique ID where I can say that I can allocate so many resources to it. I think this gentleman asked a question where the same developer has numerous applications. Does it mean that it gets applied globally and I won't be able to piecemeal allocate different resources based on the application? You can definitely do that using the policy where you say that I set a particular HTTP header tag which says this is from application A. And based on that, I can define a policy which says that if this is application A and for this developer, then give him so much of quota. You can do that. No. What would apply is for all developers in that particular subscription level. Or you can create multiple products. You can create one more flavor which says that it is meant for a subset of developers who want this many calls. And then you can do that. There's no limit to how many products you can create, all using the same APIs. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's totally outside the domain of this API management. So your service has to handle that the way it is. You don't need to change that. So that will continue to remain the way it is. So we are not saying that because we are bringing API management here, you should change your security policy just for sake that we want to abstract it. No, we are not saying that. So you will continue to use your same security policy where your service accesses your database or whatever. That doesn't change. We'll see how we can sort of dovetail our security mechanism to work with yours so that whatever. This is backend. You already have your service API which is talking to that. No? So that continues to remain. So API manager is not going to give anything specific to your backend database or something. I think you didn't get my point. Or you can come down the drawing board and then probably we can discuss it if you don't mind. Any other questions? Yeah. OAuth for the service or for developer registration? For the end user. OAuth, or it could be mutual certificate or basic authentication. You can create new APIs, even though the operation is same, you can create different flavor of that API And for this flavor of API, I say that I give OAuth, whereas for something else, it is mutual authentication. That is possible. Yes. You can set a timeout. So where, of course, you should only identify those objects which are not liable to change, at least over the course of the day or so many number of hours. They are good candidates to push them. Something which is transient, like session state, definitely you will not use it for that. You can build some operation which says that you can update that particular cache. Right now, we don't have an API to directly do that. At this point, you can just define a cache, and then you can say that, how do I update the cache? So let's you can say that right now I'm getting the first call based on this query parameters. Obviously, the cache doesn't have it. It comes back, and then you can say, now you set the cache, and then it will sort of hold that. You can sort of put an expiry duration. Based on that, it will sort of clear the cache and then get it afresh. But make sure you have only the right candidates chosen for this cache, because you don't get to play around with it so much, like you do the ASP.in session state provider and all that. You can't do that. Okay, thanks a lot for listening in.